Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. There is today no shortage of wise people and political pitchmen offering to sell magic beans to the Democrats. James Carville says it's time for the party itself to be born again. Newt Gingrich warns that this could be the start of a long time wandering in the wilderness for liberals. Well, it is now 1 week since the election that returned and energized George Bush to the Oval Office. And among rank-and-file Democrats, some are still talking about moving to Canada. Others are saying that now more than ever is the time to stay put. And they're asking, what's next? What's missing? Does the Democratic Party need a better candidate or a better message or something more fundamental? Has the party lost the ability to speak beyond its own loyal supporters? Has it lost sight of what it stands for, or has it just lost the ability to explain what that is? This hour, a chance for you to play either party revolutionary or political pundit, critic or savior. We are at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And a note for those of you who are following along on our website, theconnection.org. Our web people have posted an electoral map that's a little bit more detailed than just the red and the blue, a bit of pink, a bit of pale blue, a bit of purple, if you want to just remind yourself of how we got to where we are now, a week later. We're going to start today with Kathy Allen. She's a Democratic political strategist joining us on the line from Seattle. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning.
Now, you weren't directly working on the Kerry campaign, but a lot of your friends were. How are they doing?
Well, we're still in shock and depression, not quite denial. But we actually are kind of taking a look at the tea leaves. I think that we've got 140 reasons why we didn't do as good as we had intended, and 4 reasons why we think they did better than we thought.
Okay, chief among those reasons of what went wrong, what's at the top of the list?
Well, one of the things is that we did everything logistically and in terms of the field. I never saw a field operation look so good, and I had a chance to see it in 5 different states where we were working to try to get women out to vote. Fact is it looked darn good from where I sat. When it comes to the main reasons I see is that they have actually figured out how to do ground operations and grassroots politics. Every time we'd be walking door to door here, we'd see yet again another group of folks that were carrying Bush materials. Fact is that it seems to me that we probably underestimated their capacity to learn how to do grassroots politics. That would be one. Another is that I hear from a lot of folks up here that they still had the hardest time trying to find the message with Kerry. That seems to be something we hear often or not. It's just that, yes, there were wedge issues, but they don't really get that sense of that one message that Kerry had. And even though there are those of us who have been working with Kerry from the beginning, the fact is that they did not hear one thing to grasp to that is as strong as the security issue.
Kathy, whose fault is that? Do we blame the candidate for being unable to express the message, the campaign, for not giving him the words that he needed? Or is this something that we mark in the column of credit for the Republicans in just knocking the Democrats off their game?
Yes, I think that we didn't knock so much off the game other than the fact that they managed to move beyond theirs into our territory. I don't think we did anything wrong. In fact, when I go back and look at the campaign, we didn't win. That's the only thing I could look at that went wrong. Things looked, in a world of Democratic politics, you're always amazed when you end up on the ground and people are actually talking with one another, reading from one script. We have the party of, just go out and do what you think is right. This time, there was more organizational, central attitude, one focus. We were moving in the right direction. And actually, right now, the hardest part is that there is not one piece of blame you can go to bed with and say, that was it. Now, it wasn't me. It was somebody else. It just didn't happen that way. And so right now, there's not blame, at least for where I'm sitting. I don't see people blaming anyone other than looking at Republicans who learned how to do what we have always done better.
Kathy, thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Good to have you on the program again. Kathy Allen, a Democratic activist and a recruiter, joining us there on the phone from Seattle. I'm joined now in the Boston studio by Andre Cherney. He's a policy advisor and speechwriter for John Kerry in this campaign, was a senior speechwriter for Gore in 2000, and author of a book called The Next Deal. Andre, nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Dick.
And Ann Lewis is joining us from a studio in Washington. She's national chair of the Women's Vote Center of the Democratic National Committee. Hi, Ann.
Hello.
Okay, the message thing, let's start there. What was wrong with it, or was there one? Ann, how about you first?
Well, I'd start first. Let me say I was pleased to hear from Kathy, who's an old friend, and just want to agree with her that in terms of grassroots mobilization turnout, the best we've seen and definitely something to build on. When it comes to message, one, I want to remind us how difficult the terrain was. Basically, Democrats were asking the American people to oust a commander-in-chief at a time when we have men and women in combat 3 years after this country had been viciously attacked. I think we had the stronger argument for why we could have done better, but it was hard. It is hard to make that case. There's not a lot of historic precedent for it. But I think the bigger issue was that the Bush campaign brilliantly reframed this or kept this campaign as George Bush is the commander-in-chief. He's going to keep us safe. And events on the ground, many of which we're all familiar with, conspired to keep that in the news.
Events on the ground, you meaning here in the campaign or overseas?
No, I meant in Iraq. Yeah. I meant overseas, which were very real and concerning. But, you know, John Kerry wanted to talk about health care. He wanted to talk about economy. He wanted to talk about real change. We know that people want to change in the economy. They wanted changes in policy. Very hard to get that message through. So I would score it as real events first. Second, a very, very smart campaign by the Bush team, definitely making the most of what they had. And our message perhaps a little had more elements. Kathy just said, what's the message? You know what? It had several parts. It was hard to connect with a several-part message this year.
Andre, you're part of the team that was crafting this message. Are you beating yourself up, or what do you think?
No, I mean, I second everything that that Ann said. I think she's absolutely right. I would add another wrinkle, though, which is that we as a party need to do a better job of having a overall thematic structure of what it is we're trying to do. We have great policies that would do a lot of good for the country. And if you look at the poll numbers, most people agree that they would do a lot of good for the country. But sometimes it doesn't add up to a whole for people. They ask, what is the story there?
Is that one way of putting it?
James Carville talked about, you know, the party needs a narrative, a story to tell, and he's said that in the past few days, and I think that's right. We as a party know what it is we stand for in lots of different policy areas. We don't have a larger overall theme in the same way that the Republicans do and certainly did this year.
I mean, one of the big knocks that I've read and heard about what went wrong in the campaign is the Democrats were too concerned with winning and not concerned enough with defining themselves. We go back to the primaries. Kerry was chosen not as the man with the best message, but the man who was considered at the time to be the most electable. At its base, that's a way of saying this man brings us to power, not this man stands for something. Is that part of the problem?
Boy, I would just disagree with that because I think John Kerry, in fact, did stand for some things. Again, and I'll go back, and Andrea and I guess are going to agree with each other a lot this morning. I hope that doesn't make for a boring show.
Well, we'll get some callers on.
Okay.
Shake you up a little bit.
Here's as a very smart brother of mine, I actually think, said, the Democratic Party sometimes manages to be less than the sum of our parts. John Kerry did stand for, you know, good economic policy. Let's stop the tax credits for outsourcing. He had a terrific health care plan. It really could have made a difference in people's lives. We had too many elements that we stood for. We did not succeed, whether it was because it was a narrative or it was an overflowing cup. We overcomplicated what we were trying to say to people in the time we had available. And I would say one thing we have to keep reminding ourselves of, and I think this election was a painful reminder, the people whose votes are at stake here have a lot less time and attention available than those of us who care deeply about policy. We'd like to talk about it on and on. The answer is not one more policy. Once in a while, it could even be one less, but make the most of a few.
Yeah, I again agree with that, but I think we can even push the analysis further. You talked about the defining of John Kerry, and in some ways, I think a lot of Democrats thought that if we just point out what George Bush has done wrong, if we show all the ways in which he's led the country down the wrong direction, we're actually going to be able to say that we can offer a better solution.
Wrong war, wrong time, wrong place.
Exactly. Looking at jobs, looking at the economy, looking at health care, looking at the war. I think one of the lessons we've learned is that we actually do have to be very clear with the American people about what it is we stand for. Again, not just all the policy
not
prescriptions.
To be against what
it's not enough
quo.
To, but you actually have to inspire people to say, "Here is the new direction we're gonna head," and they have to know what that direction is. That they're not going to even throw away an incumbent with low job approval ratings and people having the sense that he's leading the country in the wrong direction. They have to know where you're going to head, and they have to have a sense of who you are as a person.
Let's take our first call from Shrewsbury, Mass., and Brian's on the line. Hi, Brian. What do you think?
Well, I think I have a couple of comments. First of all, briefly to discuss the Kerry campaign, I think it could have been run better. We really should have responded to the Swift boat veteran ads faster, and we should have responded better to a lot of George Bush's attacks. But okay. That aside...
Yeah. Take us out of the mechanics. Take us to the big picture.
Well, going into the future, I think we need to articulate as a party the values behind our policies. Why do we believe what we believe in? For example, where's the morality in 40 million people not having health insurance? Where's the morality in saddling our children and grandchildren with billions of dollars of debt? Where's the morality in killing thousands of innocent people in Iraq? So we need to articulate why we believe what we believe in.
But boy, I think that could not be more right, now I just say. And let me just take it a step further. There were some false choices going on right now in the op-ed pages and the kind of post-election debate that we tend to have in Washington, in which you have values on one side and good policy on the other. And that is clearly a false choice. But what we need to do is talk about policies with values language. Real people do not wake up in the morning and decide, I'm either going to be a good values-driven person today, or I'm going to do the right thing and I'm going to do my job.
I don't
we
quite,
ought to be
give me
as
an example of what
are.
You mean, Ann. You say express the policies in terms of values. What weren't we hearing that either the candidate or the party ought to have been talking about then?
I'll give you two examples. One is I think we ought to have been talking more about valuing work and responsible hard work. I'm talking about how hard people work and how they should be rewarded for it, that we want a society that values work. And then I think if we set up that frame, then it's easier to talk about your economic policy. My own favorite is I used to talk about rising oil prices. And I said that I remembered in 2000 when George Bush, then a candidate, said that the president should jawbone OPEC to get prices down. And I would remind my audiences that, as I read in the Bible, Samson did a lot of damage with the jawbone of an ass. But somehow it was not working this time. Well, there's a double message there. It's a way to talk about oil prices without getting into, you know, who's sitting around the table at OPEC. But it can also remind people that the Bible is a very common frame of reference for a lot of Americans.
But what one aspect of what you're suggesting is that a lot more of American political conversation will be placed in some kind of religious context.
Well, I think value, I'm talking here cultural and values-based, not sectarian.
Okay.
It is not which specific religion. People aren't asking which 39 articles do you belong to. But they do want to say, I think, religion's an important part of my life. Values are an important part of my life. I'd like to think it's part of yours. And it is a common language that I think we abandon at our peril.
All right. We're going to come back and pick this up in just a minute. We have to take a short break. So a chance to remind our listeners, with me on the program today, Ann Lewis, National Chair of the Women's Vote Center of the Democratic National Committee, Andre Cherney, who was policy advisor and speechwriter for John Kerry during part of the campaign. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Chance for you to pull up a chair and talk about what went wrong, or if you look at it from the other perspective, what went right. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Gordon, you're listening to The Connection. Questions about the Democratic Party this hour. Has it lost the ability to speak beyond its own supporters? Has it lost sight of what it stands for, or just lost the ability to explain what that is? Or is this just a moment, an interruption in the natural rule of the Democratic Party in the United States? We'd like to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Norfolk, Virginia, for our next call, and Ben's with us. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Dick. Good morning.
Yeah, what do you think?
Good. Listen, as a Southern Democrat who lives in a red state here in Virginia, who drove over 600 miles, by the way, to drive down to Florida to help out down in Duval County, I've got to echo what Kathy said earlier, which about meeting our goals, and we did. I was in the headquarters in Duval County. We met all of our turnout goals, but what we did, we were high-fiving each other. I mean, what we didn't count on was this drive and determination on the other side. And I've got to tell you, I think that it would be a major mistake of our party to nominate another Northeast liberal. I love Hillary. I think Hillary is great. But I think to put Hillary on the top of this ticket, I think, would be a disaster. I think Hillary should stay right where she is in the United States Senate in New York.
Now, Senator Kerry's brother is on the radio here in New England today saying it's possible that Senator Kerry himself might stand for, the president in 2008. What's wrong with that Northeast liberal then? Why won't that work then, Ben?
Dick, and it won't work. It won't sell here. I'm one of these guys. I'm from the South. I live in Virginia. I'll give you a good example. We have Mark Warner here, superstar in the party, in the same state where John Kerry lost by almost 10%, lost by 9% here in Virginia. Mark Warner has a 60-something percent approval rating. A Southern Democrat, socially moderate on other issues, pro-choice. But a liberal, to answer your question, that can't win another North. The purest definition of stupidity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. We got to look for the Mark Warners. We got to look for the Tom Vilsack.
Okay, Ben, you know what I'm going to do here? I'm going to swing this conversation down to where you were during the election, down to Florida. Senator Bob Graham's joining us on the line from there. He's the senior senator from Florida, was a candidate for the Democratic presidential nominations, joining us on the line from Miami. Senator, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
I understand today is your birthday, so happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you very much for that as well.
Now, you had a chance to listen to Ben talk there. You also have almost 40 years under your belt getting elected as a Democrat in the South. Is he right? Is it true that a Northeast liberal's never going to be elected as president for the Democrats?
No, I wouldn't be that declarative. I think the right candidate from any region of the country who can present the rationale of his or her record is electable. There is, however, some significance to the history that there have been three Democrats elected as president since John Kennedy, all three of whom were Southerners, Lyndon Johnson, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and two of the three were Southern governors. I think that tells you something about the pool from which elected Democrats has most easily flowed.
Okay, but you were also listening in a little bit earlier in the program then. If it's not necessarily geography that determines winning back the White House, what was missed this time around? What were you sitting and watching?
Well, let me just focus on one thing, because it's an area that I've spent a lot of my senatorial career on, and that is the issue of national security and specifically the leadership in the war on terror. The president wrapped himself in the flag of being the great defender. I heard one of his spokesmen say that when you step into the ballot booth and close the screen and you're there alone, think about who will defend you the best and let that impulse determine who you vote for. The fact is the president has had a disastrous record in the war on terror. There are more terrorists today than there were on September the 11th. They are better organized, better equipped, and we have fewer allies to resist them than we did. Yet we sort of let him get away with that self-described mantle of being our great defender. And I believe that security issues played the most dominant role in people's ultimate decision as to who to vote for.
Let's just hear briefly from Andre and Ann Lewis on this one. Andre, you first. What was missed then? Where did the Democrats lose that opportunity to tackle Bush on that one point?
I think we had a very strong critique of the Bush foreign policy. I don't think we well enough enunciated our own foreign policy and our own vision of national security. John Kerry was great in a lot of ways about talking about what was going wrong in Iraq, about what was going wrong in the war on terror. He said he'd go out and capture and kill terrorists. But I think we as Democrats need to have a better sense of conveying to the American people that this is a long-term ideological struggle, that we are standing on the side of democracy and freedom around the world, that we have a way of bringing those values to people around the world, a way of solving terrorism and a threat from terrorism that George Bush doesn't have, of working with failed states, of working with countries around the world to build this kind of coalition against terror. And I think we have to be more frontal about that. We have to see terrorism not as an issue or the Republican issue that we need to talk about until we get it right, and then we can go back to our issues such as education and health care and the economy. We have to see national security as a Democratic issue in the same way that Harry Truman did and John F. Kennedy did and people like Bob Graham did.
So, Ann Lewis, how do you make the case?
Well, I think that's very important. And one is we do have to talk about it positively. We have to act not as if we've been dragged into it. We do have to talk about, yeah, you know what? We got American values, democracy, human rights, working with people around the world. We do have to talk more aggressively about national security and foreign policy. I think we have to do a little more of that in order for our critique to take hold. And Bob Graham, Senator Graham, has done such important work in this area. I just have to, again, ditto sort of everything he said about it. But we did not connect with people on that. They heard the specifics, but they didn't think we were, again, the right lead. They didn't give us enough, I guess, credit for being the leaders they wanted. Remember, they had seen George Bush as commander-in-chief for 3.5 years. So I do want to remind people it can be hard for someone who's sitting in the Senate to compete when every day on the news for 3 years they saw the president taking that role. Harder to do it in a more hypothetical way. Just one last piece for Ben.
Let me stop you if I can there. And we have a whole bunch of people who want to join us on the phone, and I want to make sure that they get included as well. We're going to go next to Cambridge, and Steve's joining us on the line from there. Steve, are you buying this?
Oh, hi, Dick. No, I'm not buying it. And hi, Andre and Ann and Senator Graham. You know, I'm a Northeast liberal up here, and, you know, there's talks of secession going on, but I don't think that's the case. It wasn't values. And George Bush was a failed commander-in-chief based on misinformation. And basically, the Republicans ran a campaign of fear. And the Dems laid down. They did, you know, from the conventions to the last days of the campaign, the rhetoric was just so thick with the fear and the misinformation. And the Democrats didn't battle it. They weren't tough enough. They didn't point out.
Okay, but Steve, let's go back to what Ann was saying earlier, how difficult it is to take on a commander-in-chief during a war. John Kerry was standing up there saying, I'm going after the terrorists. I'm going to hunt them down. I'm going to kill them. What were they missing if there was something that they ought to have been saying?
Well, if I could just inject, I think that in any race against an incumbent, the first a requirement is to convince the people that they should be prepared to fire the incumbent. Here's a person that just a few years earlier they elected and gave responsibility to. The presumption is I was right in 2000, and I'm going to continue to be right by continuing George Bush as president. I don't think in the area of national security and the war on terror we did an adequate job of convincing the American people that George Bush deserved to be fired for his behavior, and then lay out the case. And if you fire him, here is what we're going to do, and be able to say it with specifics and credibility.
Are you saying that there was too much? Andre was talking earlier about too much criticism, not enough. Here's what we stand for, Senator?
Well, I don't think there was enough criticism. I mean, I think there were so many places over the last 3.5 years where the president has placed the country in greater vulnerability, and it wasn't just Iraq. It's a global criticism, and we should have pounded away at his record. Then we could have said, and here's what the alternative would be.
Yeah, I hear what Steve is saying. I personally disagree. I think we did a good job on saying that George Bush should be fired. I don't think we ever got over the hurdle of saying that Democrats should be hired to replace him. If you look at the numbers on Election Day, people knew what a bad job George Bush had done on Iraq, on the economy, on health care, on all the issues that were facing the country. They just didn't have enough confidence in Democrats that we shared their values, that we shared their genuine concern with security and the war on terror, that we really had a way forward. It wasn't, again, just a matter of talking more about policy and our plans. It was really showing that we have a connection with them.
Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina for our next call. Bill's on the line from there. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
What do you think?
I've got to agree with the last caller. I think that this election was more about ignorance of the electorate. The issues at hand that face this country are not Democrat or Republican. They're distinctly individual, have individual impact on people. You guys got out scared by a pro. You know, I mean, he freaked this country out about issues that really aren't issues.
But Bill, if what you have to do from a Democratic perspective is win over moderates who are more inclined to go to the Republican Party in this election, calling them stupid doesn't seem like a particularly good way of doing that.
No, well, I bad choice of words there.
I use the word stupid, but I mean, you're saying that they're ignorant, and I'm wondering whether or not, in fact, that's you know, wearing a blinder on one side of your face and saying, I just don't want to know what they're about.
Well, it possibly is. I'm in a Republican hotbed down here, and most of the people I speak to don't understand. They hear criticism of the party and criticism of an individual, and they shut down and say Democrats are shrill. And for me, the frustration was getting them to understand what is seriously wrong with the environment, what is wrong with the economy, and getting people to focus on the real issue. I found my approach much better when I said, this is what's wrong, not what Bush had created. And you know, this wasn't about Democrat or Republican. It's giving them the correct fear or educating them about the things they should be scared about.
Senator Graham, I'm going to let you go in just a minute and continue on with your birthday. But I do want to ask you, in all those times that you won election as a Democrat in a state which traditionally leans Republican, how it is that you find a way of explaining the message without saying to the other side, you're stupid or I know better than you? Because clearly that's not what you did.
Well, first, I think you have to establish yourself as a human being. One of the things that I've been doing for 30 years is taking different jobs. I'm going to do my 405th one tomorrow, in fact. So people had a sense that I wasn't just speaking from a disconnected academic basis, but that I had actually had the opportunity to get to know and understand people. Second is that I think you need to speak in parables, telling people what you intend to do, but to do it in a way in which that they can personally relate to. Third, you need to have a good organizational base behind you, because I think one of the lessons of the last few years is that the relative importance of television and other forms of communication vis-a-vis the organization to get people out to vote after they have been reached by that communication is shifting towards greater importance on organization.
When you talk about speaking in parables, are you talking about addressing specifically questions of values and morals in a language that people can sit and nod and listen to? Is that the point you're making?
That's the point. And also, I'm afraid some of our speakers had a five-point speech to give, and point number four was values. Values is not a box within four or five other points. Values is a way of looking at things which pervades all of the other points. We've allowed the definition of values to become God, guns, and gays, and omit the things that most of the great religious traditions actually spend most of their time focused on, such as love and tolerance and concern for your neighbor. I think well within those traditions, Democrats can insert a value system that will be very understood and persuasive.
Senator Graham, I thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Senator Bob Graham, senior senator from Florida, retiring at the end of this year. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. I want to come back to the guests who are with us for the balance of the hour, Ann Lewis in Washington, Andre Cherney here in Boston. Andre, the talk about values and parables, is it as simple as saying that the Democratic Party needs to find the language and the comfort to talk about Jesus to voters?
Well, I think talking about religion and talking about things from a religious standpoint is part of it, but not the whole thing. I think we're dealing with two separate issues when we're talking about this whole values debate. One is the language we use. Do we talk about things in terms of economic good, or do we talk about things as a moral basis? I think those are the types of things that Ann was speaking about earlier, talking about issues like the minimum wage, talking about issues that are democratic issues, but saying here's how they affect values that we believe in: hard work, personal responsibility. Those are very important, and I think it's something Democrats need to do, and religious language is part of that. Most people aren't members of the religious right, but most people are religious, and those words and those themes are part of the vernacular that we all live with and mm-hmm. and part of the way that people can hear our message. I think that's half of it, but I think the other half is also talking about expressly moral and values-laden issues. I think Senator Graham was exactly right. Values issues are more than just the things that people are pointing out in the aftermath of the campaign. It's not just abortion. It's not just gay marriage. But there are values issues of poverty. There are values issues of 45 million Americans without health care. There are values issues of global AIDS. Karl Rove, of all people, made that point on Meet the Press this past weekend when he said global AIDS is a values issue. Democrats should be talking about those kinds of values issues and not leaving the whole terrain of values and faith to the Republican Party.
A change in language, Anne, does that work? Is that a large part of it?
That is some of it. But remember what we're saying when we talk about change in language. I would say to your question about does this mean talking about Jesus? No.
Yeah.
Because if you talk in a sectarian way, you narrow the audience you're talking to. I'm talking about using faith and values in an inclusive way. If I talk about social justice, everyone, whatever their particular religious tradition, knows what I mean. So I think one of them is understanding that, you know, we can't be like that old-fashioned English tourist who went abroad and finding that people did not understand English thought the answer was to speak louder. The answer is not to raise our voices with the language we already have, but to go back and, as a sign of respect for people we want to reach, use some of the language and symbols that they connect to in their everyday lives. And again, I think this is so important because it, in fact, builds support for the policies we care about.
Okay, but you know that is a geographical thing, isn't it? Because Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton and the people who come from the South understand that implicitly. They're raised with that as politicians.
That's a point I wanted to make, thank you, when it was originally raised. You know what? We're not going to choose our candidate, I would hope, by zip code. And we're not going to rule people out because of geography. And I say this as someone who has worked in Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign. Anyone who thinks that saw her campaigning in upstate New York thinks that she is somehow a Manhattan liberal would really not understand the rural communities in which she wants support. It is about talking to people, again, where they are. And it's true that Southerners have had an experience, more history of doing this, but there are many very capable Democrats out there who know how to do it. And we've got to listen to them.
All right, Connection listeners, 1-800-423-8255. If a Democratic candidate is able to talk to you where you are you more interested perhaps in listening to what it is they have to say? Is it a question of language? Is it a question of message? Is it a question of the messenger? This hour, a week after the election, we're taking a look through the eyes of Democrats at what they think went wrong in this election. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. With me in the studio, Andre Cherney, policy advisor, speechwriter for John Kerry, also worked for Al Gore in 2000. Ann Lewis is the national chair of the Women's Vote Center of the Democratic National Committee. And we're talking about either what went wrong or what went right or what the Democrats are or should be talking about at this point, contemplating 2006 and 8 and 12 on into the future. 1-800-423-TALK to Wadi, Kentucky next. And Herb's joining us. Hi, Herb. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Dick. I thought it was really important to get this in because I agreed with your last caller, and I'm also in a very, very Republican area down here. And I had a lot of conversations with guys I work with, and reasonable guys that did not like this president, doesn't like any of his policies, but they got put over the top by the gay marriage issue. It was a brilliant strategy by the Republicans to bring that to the front, and they couldn't handle it. They just can't handle it, and none of them down here, and I think that cost you the election.
And so they were saying to you what, that the Democratic Party is the party of gay marriage and therefore we have to vote for Bush because he's not?
You're fighting the churches down here, and I literally had one of these young fellows tell me, I don't want my children taught this lifestyle in the public schools. And what they mean by that is they don't want it to be taught, it's shown as an alternative lifestyle. They truly believe the Bible. They believe that it's a sin, and that's not going to change. I think they can tolerate gays in their community, but they cannot tolerate the concept of marriage. And I think John Stewart hit it right on the head on his first show, his first interview after the election, and he's talking to the senator that won in New York. I can't recall his name. He said, "You guys really didn't underestimate how much that offended dudes seeing dudes kissing on TV." And boy, talking about hitting it, John was right on the money. That's what I saw down here.
And what do you think about this? George Will is writing today in the Washington Post that Republicans should send a big thank you note to San Francisco's Mayor Gavin Newsom, liberalism's George Wallace, he refers to him.
Well, I am troubled by some of what we saw. I do think that the constant television pictures of what were actually a few days in San Francisco probably was a gift to Republicans, which, again, they exploited. On the other hand, now that this election is over and we go back and look, A, it doesn't seem that the Bush margin was any different in states that had gay marriage on the ballot as a referendum as those that did not. I do think it was one of the wedge issues that was used, and that, to go back to my previous comments, it was harder for us to offer an alternative moral vision because, I think we don't use enough language of our own. So in some ways, we left the field open, which allowed the other side to define what they meant as values issues in ways that were divisive.
And Herb, had it not been for that one issue, do you think that it would have been a closer election? Do you think the Democrats might have won?
He had an excellent candidate, and I think that he had the message. Of course, I listened to more of it than the average guy. But he did use the proper amount of, I think, religious references to the people who did not have a problem with this man. I hope they run him again. I really do, because now we know who he is. But yes, I really think that that was the issue. And don't underestimate it down here, because you had the worst presidency, I think, that we've ever seen in my lifetime. And to only get the same margin as last time, this guy should have been blown out of the water. And he would have been, I'm afraid, other than that issue. The other issue with everybody down here is abortion.
Let's just try and stick with the one that you brought, Herb. I want to hear from Andre for a minute.
I think Herb makes a valid point. Democrats aren't going to change their position on equal rights. John Kerry said that he was against gay marriage, that he did not support gay marriage. He did not support a national constitutional amendment against it, but did not support gay marriage itself. I think one of the things that we do need to do is, because we're not going to reach all of those voters who are mostly concerned about the issue, but we can talk more about the importance of marriage. You know, we could say, look, if Republicans are really concerned with defending marriage, as they say, then let's not worry as much about the relatively small number of same-sex couples that want to get married. Let's talk about all the marriages out there. What are we actually going to be doing to help those marriages and those families? To say that family values is a Democratic issue, and to talk about that, we're not going to reach everybody who's concerned about that, but we can reach a lot of people who are concerned about the fabric of our society,
Isn't
about the fabric
quicksand,
of our community.
Though? I mean, aren't you just being drawn into exactly into the field that the Republicans want to have the Democrats? Yeah, we got family values too. Look at our family values.
No, if it's just we have family values too, then that is the problem. But it has to be about something bigger than that. We can't cede the values of family and faith and responsibility and hard work to the Republicans. They don't deserve that political terrain. They've done nothing to really deserve it. That should be Democratic terrain. If we cede that, then we've ceded everything.
All right.
I just want to make the one point. And Andre said, we're not going to change our position. Democrats are not going to start demonizing people. We are not for discriminating against people, and we're not for writing discrimination into the Constitution. As I look forward on this issue, I have to say, you know what? The terrain has now shifted. It is now up to George Bush and his Republican allies. They are going to try to amend the Constitution. They are going to fall short. And that means, I think, that this issue is going to diminish in force. It is really important on this one for a whole set of values that we do care about, that we understand that and keep it in perspective.
To Lillington, North Carolina next. Tommy's on the line. Hi, Tommy.
Hey.
What do you think?
I think that the reason that the Democratic Party is in trouble is because they are so arrogant. I mean, I'm a Democrat in a lot of ways. I voted probably straight Democratic my whole life on local elections. Even for the senator in North Carolina, I voted for Bowles, and I was really, you know, upset that he did lose.
Can you give me an example, Tommy, of something that you heard or saw or read in the campaign
Actually, I heard this secondhand, so I'm not sure what Ms. Kerry said, but I think she made a reference to Laura Bush that she didn't think she'd ever held a real job in her life.
Yeah, she did say that on a television program.
That.
Yeah, she did.
Well, that is ultimate arrogance, to my notion, because of the fact that just raising two kids is a real job. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Even if she didn't have a job outside of the home. But she was a librarian and a school teacher and everything else.
Now, did that turn it for you, Tommy, or are you using that as an example?
I'm using that that as an example.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
I mean, it's the same thing. The guy from, I don't know who he just was before, but I'm glad the Democratic Party ought to hire you as their strategist, because the questions you ask go right to the point about the guy from where you get turned off. Everybody, we don't like to be talked down to. Nobody likes to be talked down to. And Democrats have a way of having that superiority complex and that intellectual complex that likes to talk down to people. I mean, they do. They write them off as stupid or ignorant. We're not. I mean, America's not ignorant. And until they – now, Senator Graham was making the real case.
Just stay with me for half a second, Tommy. I'm just wondering, Ann Lewis, if you're scribbling notes.
Oh, I'm always scribbling notes. So I learn all the time.
What would you say to Tommy on this point about either being or sounding arrogant?
Yeah, one, let me be clear. Anybody who thinks Democrats are arrogant should just be listening to us in the last week as we very earnestly go about saying, okay, why didn't we make the case better? What is it we could do better? And I think there's been a lot of those conversations, and I would hope Tommy would choose to be part of them. I have to say, in Theresa Hines' defense for a moment, she did say something she shouldn't have, and she apologized for it right away. I think all of us in our lives, once in a while, especially when you're somebody in public life unexpectedly as she was for a year, once in a while you might say something you're sorry for. And the good news was she immediately apologized. So I would hope that that would not be some lasting impact on people. But
well,
I was
honestly just using that as an example.
No, no, fair enough. Fair enough, Tommy. Andre, tell me what you're thinking as Tommy talks about this arrogance. I wonder if it doesn't come both ways, where there are Democrats who think, darn, those Republicans are so arrogant.
It is. You know, I think there's a sense of elitism in parts of both parties. You know, I think a lot of the people, I think Tommy's probably talking about this, have a sense the Democrats have a sense of cultural elitism, that we're associated with Hollywood and the coasts and people that look down on the American people. Most Democrats I've met aren't like that, but there's definitely that sense out there. At the same time, the Republicans have a strong strain of economic elitism. Mm-hmm. The Republican Party is the party that's out there saying that people aren't able enough to make decisions for themselves, aren't able enough to get drugs from Canada, that they need to have big tax cuts given to big corporations and to the wealthy, because they're the ones that create jobs, not entrepreneurs out there, not individuals that are struggling to make ends meet. There's a strong strain of the wealthy and the powerful, those who were born rich, those who were born well-connected, were born that way for a reason, and they deserve all of the benefits and they deserve all of the trust in this country. And I think that's arrogant as well.
Tommy, last one to you. Is there anything that a Democratic candidate, is there anything that a John Kerry might have said that would have had you vote for him instead of for Bush?
I don't think there's anything John Kerry could have said. I think there's something that Edwards might have said.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been very much more inclined, if Edwards hadn't moved so far to the left, that I would have probably, I think he would have had a much better chance. I voted for Bill Clinton. I mean, give me a break. I mean, it's not like I don't understand the Democratic Party. In the South, it used to be all Democrats.
No, my question is sort of what it would take, and this is on behalf of the Democrats who are here and working this through, what it would take to bring you back into their party.
Well, I am in there. I mean, like I say, I voted for most of their candidates.
Yeah.
But nationally, it takes what Senator Graham was talking about. It takes exactly that. He's the man. He's your front man, you know.
Okay, Tommy, I'm going to let you go. I thank you for being with us on the program. My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. And Ann Lewis, just before we leave Bill Clinton, I know that there's going to be a big gathering of Democrats in Little Rock next week for the opening of the Clinton Library. And I read something yesterday. I can't for the life of me remember where it was. Somebody was saying, you know what? Clinton's the problem. Democrats need to criticize this man, that when it comes to marking the moral divide that separates Republicans and Democrats, it's the Democratic Party's reluctance to say, you know, he misbehaved. That still haunts the party.
I could not disagree more strongly, and I think Bill Clinton in so many ways showed us, A, not just how a Democrat gets elected and reelected, mm-hmm. the first Democratic president to serve two full terms, but because of his record, because of the policies that Bill Clinton put in place on fiscal responsibility, on actually making a difference in people's lives, he's given Democrats a record we can work on. Again, crime rates actually went down in the Clinton administration. We put more police officers on the street. Now, there are no shortage of people, beginning with Bill Clinton, who said, I made a terrible mistake. I'm very sorry. That was wrong. There has been no attempt to cover that one up. But what's interesting to me, and I think Tommy is an example, is that the American people also have a sense of context and perspective. You know what? They're not perfect. They don't expect their leaders to be perfect. They do think you ought to be honest with them mm-hmm. about who you are. And then they just want to be sure that you are working as hard on their behalf as you can. And that's what Bill Clinton did.
And I'm thinking, Andre, though, as we have talked about the war and values and in the environment and healthcare and all this, these other where the issues were, that at the end of the election, that doesn't really matter. That what matters to people is what Anne's getting at here. Do you believe that the person who's standing in front of you asking for your vote is really going to honor that vote, which is a heading in the direction of identity politics? And is there a danger in going too far there, in leaving the policy too far behind?
There is some danger, but I think all the things you mentioned, the values, the security, all those factors put together add up to a sense of who the person is. When you talk about values, when you talk about security, as Senator Graham was saying, it's not just about the policy positions. It's not just about your five-point plan. The way you talk about it, the issues you choose to talk about and not talk about, send a powerful message about who you are. Anne talked about Bill Clinton, and I think that's exactly right. You look at the way he talked about issues, the fact that he talked about issues like crime, the fact that he talked about issues like welfare reform, it wasn't just the fact of his policies. It was the very notion that here was a Democrat who was willing to talk about personal responsibility, who's willing to hold everybody to a standard of personal responsibility, from CEOs who weren't doing right by their employees to common crooks on the street who were hurting people in their own neighborhood. That same sense all adds up to the identity politics that you were talking about.
Well, we will listen in more as this conversation continues. Andre, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Andre Cherney is visiting scholar at Harvard University, formerly advisor to John Kerry and Al Gore. Ann Lewis, thanks for your time.
Oh, always a pleasure.
And as national chair of the Women's Vote Center of the Democratic National Committee, earlier in the program, we talked to Senator Bob Graham, Democratic senator from Florida, Kathy Allen, a Democratic political strategist with the Connections Group in Seattle. Our program is produced by Alan Cockle, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenelosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugart. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.